Welcome to The Apple Seed, the storytelling podcast from BYU Radio, where your family can gather for great stories from great storytellers in every episode. Stories bring us together. We hope the stories on the show will spark memories and thoughts that you can share with the people you love. I'm your host, Sam Payne, and today we're bringing you stories of lending a helping hand. We'll start with a story from our friend Andy Offutt Irwin, whose stories are often about his fictional Aunt Marguerite and the people who occupy her world. Andy's stories are funny, tender, and homey. That is, they're sure to provide you with gentle observations of people and places and even objects that you might recognize as being like things from your own experience. This story is about Braswell, who gets a job cleaning tombstones. In fact, that's the name of the story. Here's Braswell Cleans Tombstones from Andy Offutt Irwin.
You may have heard, my buddy Braswell is utterly convinced that my Aunt Marguerite is psychic and knows everything about his life. We are grown-ups now, Braswell and I, and we see each other every once in a while, and we reminisce on old times. Braswell is in construction. He was a carpenter for years and years and years, and around 2007, he decided he would be a contractor. He never really became an architect, but he can build anything. And in 2008, as you may recall, if you were alive, the economy turned a bit, and a lot of housing did not happen. But Braswell, he's still a carpenter. He does a lot of small work for people. He does a lot of projects for other contractors, but he never was able to get the contracting going. One day, in the early 2010s, he bought himself a really high-end pressure washer, and it was pressure washing driveways. He towed his pressure washer in an old lawnmower trailer. He strapped it down with various bungee cords and ropes, and he towed it behind the vehicle that he had always wanted. Well, he's wanted this vehicle since 1989. He loves this thing. It is the Pontiac Transport. Now, the Pontiac Transport, it looks like the vehicle that if the Robinson family from Lost in Space came home, if the Jupiter II landed, it would be the van they would pile in. It looks like it's from the future. It's a long needle-nose thing. It was advertised in 1989 by Captain Picard from Star Trek Next Generation, Jean-Luc Picard. And he would say, the Pontiac Transport. And Braswell would see that on the commercials in between football innings. And he just always wanted a 1989 Pontiac Transport. And in 2016, he could afford a 1989 Pontiac Transport. It was $300. And in his heart of hearts, he named it. He never told a soul. He named it the Enterprise. He didn't even tell Tina, his wife. He tells Tina everything, but he just did not want to hear the noise from Tina because Tina already calls it the Dustbuster. And that's really what these vans look like. You know, it's about 8 feet between the dashboard and the windshield. So if your dark glasses are there, they're gone forever. And Braswell will go, and Mrs. Robinson saw Braswell out, and Mrs. Robinson has done her pre-planning for her funeral. She's gone down to Harwell's funeral home, and she's all paid for everything, and she went through the cemetery to look to where she's going to be interred. She's an old lady, and she's ready, and then she locked, oh gosh, the marble tombstones in her plot were just, they were covered with lichen and marble in the south where we have something called humidity. You know, it was, the mold had turned to black, and she saw Braswell, and she said, Braswell, how much would you charge me to clean my tombstones? And Braswell just out of the air said, $100. And she said, wonderful. That was crazy great money. It would take him 15 minutes to pressure wash tombstones. And all he had to do was find a spigot. We have spigots in the cemetery all over. He had a water source. He had 100 foot of hose if he needed it. He would bring his transport and his trailer, and he pressure washed it. And he did. He pressure washed Mrs. Robinson's tombstones. Now, the main stone, the main family stone, is a beautiful thing. It's very old, and it's in relief. It's carved in relief. It isn't engraved. And what that means is, instead of the letters going in, the carver had to carve away from the letters and make the letters stand out. It's much fancier, much more expensive. What Brazel didn't know is when he did that, he knocked a stick off the R. Well, it didn't fall off immediately. It was cracked. And after he finished the job, he walked around it, looked at it, was satisfied with his good job because he has work ethics. He does. He takes pride in his work. And about 2 days later, the stick on the R fell off. So now the Robinson family is the Pobinson family. Well, Marguerite's house is on the opposite end of the cemetery from my house, and we walked to each other's homes through the cemetery. I rode my bike through the cemetery all my life. And in the cemetery, there was an acre. They tore down two houses, and there were like 3 acres, and that's where they were going to bury everybody in the 80s and the 90s. And then Mr. Reams, he was the first to die, and they put him right on first base because, you know, we had been playing baseball out there. Mrs. Reams didn't know why his headstone had a right angle path to and from his head. But she knows the cemetery, and she walks around the cemetery. In fact, our cemetery in our town, it's sort of the jogging trail for the aged. And she saw that Brazel was doing that, and she wanted to tell Brazel that it wasn't good for the marble, especially. Now granite's really hard, but marble sugars is the term that we use. And she had gone on the internet, and she found a way to clean tombstones, marble tombstones, without doing them any harm. And she would know that Brazel would want to know how to do this. So she printed it off, she folded it, and she put it in her leather fanny pack that she always wears. It has a little first aid kit because she's a doctor, you know, when she goes around the cemetery. And she saw that Brazel, it was like April, he had just done a tombstone, a whole plot. He's done a bunch of those things now. And then he just decided to, you know, like a salesperson, sort of like the dish sellers at Walmart, he just stayed there until maybe a customer came by. And that has happened for him. And so he was in the van this April day. It was a beautiful day. It was in the high 70s. His windows were down. He was in his Pontiac Transport, in his Enterprise, reading Wrestling World Daily. And when Marguerite saw him, she put on her fanny pack. She donned her Rockports. And she started making her way to Braswell. Meanwhile, this Honda Odyssey, brand new minivan, showed up in the cemetery, and a family was in that van. There was the great-grandmother, Mrs. Hinton, was in the passenger seat. Next to her was her son, John Hinton. The grandfather, to the kids in the back, behind Mrs. Hinton and her son, was Mr. Hinton's daughter and his son-in-law. And the way back of the van were the grandkids of Mr. Hinton, the great-grandkids of Mrs. Hinton. When they stopped the van, the kids had been in the van for a long time. Mrs. Hinton wanted to show the family her plot. And it was a very important thing. When they opened the back of the van, the kids ran out screaming and yelling and playing hide and seek. Old Mr. Hinton said, "You kids need to be respectful." But Mrs. Hinton played in that cemetery when she was a child. She didn't care. She was so happy. She looked at the wrought iron plot, the wrought iron fenced plot. When her grandfather died, that's when they installed that fence. She was 9 years old when her grandfather died. She remembers it so well. She was with him every day of her childhood before he died. He lived right next door to her. He was always in his shop tinking on stuff. He made her wooden toys. He always kept her involved. She knows how to work tools better than anybody in her generation because her grandfather let her work with tools. She loved her grandfather so much, and when she was 9 years old, her mother decided that it wasn't a good idea that she go to the funeral. So the day after he died and was buried, because back in the day, you died and you got buried. There was a mound of red clay where he was buried. There were flowers on top of the mound. She went out in the cemetery by herself. That new wrought iron fence was there, and she unlatched it, and it swung open and hit the other side of the fence. So it was obviously hung by somebody who would hang it like I did, because I cannot hang a door without it swinging. So she relatched that gate when she was 9 years old. She stood on the gate. She grabbed onto the spikes of the gate, and she unlatched it and rode the gate when she's 9 years old. And right before it hit the fence, she let go and did a backwards roll and popped up and looked to heaven. And when she did that, she could hear her grandfather clapping for her. He was so proud. And she knew everything was all right. And now she's 93. She rushed over to that gate. She couldn't open it. It was rusted. Nobody had opened this gate in years. In fact, Mrs. Hinton had been in a nursing home for a long time. And then her son walked up and said, "Mother, mother, stop it." And he tried to open the gate. Mrs. Hinton's son couldn't open the gate. So Mr. Hinton called his daughter to come over and to get her husband to try. Now, Mrs. Hinton's granddaughter and her husband and those children had recently been to a Renaissance festival. Families who go to Renaissance festivals and enjoy the Renaissance festivals for about 2 weeks after the Renaissance festival, they're idiots. Mrs. Hinton's granddaughter came over to the gate. Her father told her the problem, and she turned. She goes, "Good husband, do you possess the strength to open this gate?" "Oh, my good wife, I do possess the strength to open this gate, and I shall open this gate for your love. It is my duty and my honor." And he knelt before her and rose and did attempt to open the gate, but good gentles gathered here this day. It pains me to report that Mrs. Hinton's grandson-in-law did not possess the strength to open this gate. And he lamented and wailed, but Braswell, mighty Braswell, did emerge from his minivan. And not only did mighty Braswell possess the strength to open this gate, he had in his hand a can of WD-40. And Braswell did speak, and he said, "Y'all need some help." Braswell approached the gate and sprayed it once, twice, thrice, and the gate did open. And Braswell reclosed the gate and let the WD-40 do its magic. And when he closed it that last time, Mrs. Hinton stood on the gate, and she grabbed the spikes. And it all happened so fast because she was moving like a 9-year-old, which she felt like she was. And she pulled the spring latch, and the gate started to swing open. And she realized right before it hit the fence that she was not 9 years old. She was 93. It would be best not to let go and try to do a backwards roll. And when her hand hit that fence, that papery skin split up her hand, and she let go. And somehow Braswell had the presence of mind and the reflexes to catch her. And while he held her, his head blocked the sun and made a nimbus of his thinning hair. She couldn't see his face, but she could smell this man who smelled like work and tools and oil and smelled like a man. And she said, "Granddaddy." And Braswell had the presence of mind to say, "I got you, baby." And he carried her over to the Honda minivan, and Mrs. Hinton's son had opened the door, and Braswell, as gently as he could, let her down on the seat. And that's right when Marguerite arrived, because she had been making her way to Braswell. And she bandaged up Mrs. Hinton's hand as best she could, and she sent them to the big county hospital because they would be better with wound care. And they drove off. And when they drove off, Braswell began to shake. And the whole episode was coming clear to his mind. And Marguerite put her hand on his sweaty shoulder and gave his shoulder a squeeze. She looked into her fanny pack where the first aid kit had been, along with the instructions on how to clean a tombstone. And of course, she thought better about saying anything about tombstone cleaning at this time. She looked up at Braswell and said, "You did a good job, Braswell." She looked at his trailer, the pressure washer, and that ridiculous van. She knows that he's working hard. And she said, "Braswell, I admire your enterprise." Thank you so much.
That was Andy off at Irwin with Braswell Cleans Tombstones. And the story makes me think of the people who may sometimes be perceived as being in the background, but who come forward just when they're needed and help in ways that only they can. Strangely, after hearing Andy's story, I'm thinking of a bus I was on recently. Not a city bus, but one of those buses that takes you from one part of an airport to another. I had to take one of those buses from the main terminal out to my gate on a recent trip through JFK Airport in New York. And I was pretty self-absorbed during the bus ride, or maybe just chatting with my wife. One thing's for sure, the bus driver was the very last person on my mind. He was way in the background. We rode out to the proper terminal. We got off the bus, walked in the door, found our gate, and sat down to wait for boarding. And about 15 minutes later, a guy walked toward where I was sitting. The airport was crowded, and he only barely registered in my attention at first, but he walked right up to me, and then he reached out his hand, and in his hand was my wallet. The guy was the bus driver, and my wallet must have fallen out of my pocket on his bus. And somehow, he came back to the terminal and incredibly found me at the gate at JFK Airport in New York and handed my wallet to me. I was actually in a bit of shock, I think, and when I really came to myself, he was gone, back to drive his bus. I went to the desk and asked about him. I wanted to thank him. I wanted to give him like a tip or something. And the person at the desk said, "Don't worry about that. Just send a nice note to the airline," which is what I did. Man, that guy in the background, who I hadn't even noticed as he drove us out to the terminal, saved me a world of hurt. I'd never even have been able to get home without that wallet. But I did. I got home without a single hitch. Thanks, Mr. Bus Driver, and to everyone like you who comes forward at just the right time in order to help in ways that only they can. That's where Andy's story took me. Where did the story take you? And who will you take along?
Simultaneously laughing, we're all agreed that we love, love, love the apple seed.
There's a lot coming up, but I want to take just a moment and tell you about another show from the BYU Radio family of podcasts. It's called The Lisa Show. Now, life can be stressful, but Lisa Valentine Clark, the host of The Lisa Show, along with her guests and her unique council of moms, provide a positive and empowering look at all kinds of challenges. They tackle them head on, sharing experiences, offering suggestions on how we can handle relationships and health and technology and body image and family, all kinds of stuff. And Lisa is a great person to hang out with. The Lisa Show, you can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, all kinds of ways to listen to The Lisa Show whenever you like. The Lisa Show from BYU Radio.
Some more. Okay, I'll proceed with my story inspired by the apple seed.
Welcome back to the apple seed. Our next story comes from West Virginia storyteller Bill Lepp. It's about a DIY adventure. Bill trying to fix his own dryer on the cheap. He calls it the dryer story, and it was recorded right here in the apple seed studio.
Mm-hmm. I was in my office, and my wife stuck her head in the door, and she said, the dryer is not working. And I don't know how it works in your relationship, but there are certain sentences which means you need to get on top of this. And so I looked on the internet to see what a new dryer costs. And then I thought to myself, maybe we could just fix the old dryer. I have this belief. I don't have smart appliances. My appliances are all dumb. But I know that somehow they're in communication with one another, and they're in communication with my savings account. Because as soon as my savings account has enough money in it to buy a new appliance, they're like, it's your turn, dryer. So I looked up how much it would cost to get a new dryer, and I thought, you know what, maybe I can fix it myself. Now, I am not an appliance repair person, or am I? Let's just investigate that. The first thing I did was I typed into the, well, the first thing I did, I guess, was I called a dryer repair person, and I said, can you come look at my dryer? And they said it was going to cost $80 just to come look at my dryer to tell me whether or not it was broken. And that's when I really thought, maybe I can fix the thing myself. So I called myself, and I told myself that I could be there sometime tomorrow between 9 and noon. And then I didn't even show up till Wednesday. So while I was waiting for me, I typed into the interweb there, what's wrong with my dryer? And there's three things that are probably wrong with your dryer. It's either the element or the high limit thermostat or the thermal register. And the way you check the thermal register and the high limit thermostat is you hook them up to a multimeter. I do not own a multimeter. So I thought, how much does a multimeter cost? Multimeters cost $50. I thought, I'm 50 years old. I've never before needed a multimeter. So chances are, statistically, I won't need another one for another 50 years. Which means if I buy one now, it's just going to be in my way for 50 years, and I'm not going to be able to find it when I finally do need it. And then it said probably it's probably the element. That's the most likely culprit. So I went downstairs, and I took the dryer apart, which you got to unhook the top of it, and then you got to take off the front panel. Then you got to turn it around and take off the back panel, and you want to put those screws somewhere where you won't lose them. I like to put them in a bowl. That way, when you step on the bowl, the screws go everywhere. And then you have to take off, there's a little, I don't know what you call it, there's a little springy thingy. And it's a pulley and then like a big fan belt that runs the drum. You got to take all that apart. Then you turn the dryer back around and you take the drum out. And the first thing I learned also watching the internet videos is people who make DIY videos, how to make appliances, they keep their basements a lot neater than I do. So you take the drum out, you put that somewhere safe where you won't lose it, and then you can just tell that the element's broken. It's just a big spring, and it was just burned. You know, there was just a rift in it. So I got in the car, and I drove to the independent appliance store, and I bought a new element, and I screwed that in, and I put the dryer back together, and I plugged it in. I forgot I unplugged it to begin with, but I plugged it back in. Gotta remember that. And I turned it on, and it ran for like 15 minutes, and then it stopped. And I thought, must be the thermal fuse or the high register limit register, whatever I called it the first time. That's what it is. So I needed a multimeter to check those, but a multimeter's like $50, and each one of those fusey things was only like $14. So even if I had to buy them both, it's only $28. I'm still ahead. So I went back to the independent appliance store, and I bought the high limit register because that's the first one you come to, and I switched that out. That's pretty easy. And I put everything back together, plugged the dryer back in, turned it on, and it ran for like 15 minutes, and then it quit. So I went back to the independent appliance store, and I bought the other little fusey thingy. And fortunately, the guy that I had dealt with the first two times was at lunch. So now I was dealing with a third guy. He didn't know this was my third trip in. So I went home, and I put that in, and I turned the dryer on, and it ran for like 15 minutes, and then it stopped. So I went back to the independent electronics store, and I told the guy, I changed this, it runs for 15 minutes, and then it stops. And he said to me, did you check the breaker? And I said, of course I checked the breaker. And I went home, and I checked the breaker. And a dryer breaker is supposed to be a two-pole 30-amp breaker. I hope that's right. I hope there's no electricians in the audience. But instead, the guy that lived in the house before me was an even worse handyman than I was. He didn't have a 30-amp two-pole breaker. So he just put in two 15-amp single-pole breakers, and one of them was broken. So that's why it would run for 15 minutes and then turn off. So I did not go back to the independent appliance store. I have never been back to the independent appliance store. I went to Lowe's, and the old guy there, his old cranky old guy who probably used to own his own independent electronics store, and then Lowe's came, and now he has to work for them. But he sold me the thing that I needed, and I went home, and I turned off all the electricity in the house, so on and so forth. I put it in, and it didn't work at all. So I went back to Lowe's, and the guy looked at it, and he's like, I'll be darned, I've never seen this happen before, but this is actually broken. And it said, made in Jamaica, on the bottom. And he said, I don't know why somebody in Jamaica hates you, but they do. So then he gave me two of them and walked me out of the store without paying for them. He's like, "You, I don't know why that was broken. You shouldn't have to come here twice. You get two of them." And I went home, and I put the 30-amp two-pole breaker in the box, and I turned all the electricity back on, and I turned on the dryer, and it worked, and it still works. And if you're coming through South Charleston, West Virginia, you are free to dry your clothes at my house. So, yeah. So the original question was, am I an appliance repair person? And the answer is no. But if the question is, do I get paid to fix appliances? The answer is yes, every time I tell this story.
Bill Epp with the dryer story. Have you ever made a mess of something you were trying to fix? What's the weirdest job you've ever had? Did someone ever come along and lend you a helping hand in a time of need? I bet you've got some stories. We hope you'll share them with the people you love. In fact, we hope you'll share the stories with us. Email or message us with what stories came to mind for you. Our email address is theappleseed@byu.edu. That's theappleseed, all one word, at byu.edu. Or, of course, you can leave a comment on the show on any of the podcast platforms, Spotify or Apple Podcasts. We might even share your thoughts on the show. Listener Allison Johnson wrote to us, "My kids, age 16 and 13, adore your podcast and listen literally every night to go to bed." Allison, we love that so much. Thank you for reaching out, and thanks for listening, and thanks to your kids for listening, too. We want to thank Bill Lepp and Andy Offit Irwin for their tales today. You've listened to their stories. Now it's time to share some of your own. The Appleseed is produced by me, Sam Payne, Wendy Folsom, Brian Tanner, and Kira Van Dam. The rest of the Appleseed team is Tristan Schetzel, Kay Hendricks, and Nico Wetzel. We're pleased and proud to be among the many podcasts produced by the BYU Radio family of shows. If you want more great storytelling for the whole family, then search for our companion podcast, Kaboom, where you'll hear original audio adventures for the whole family. You can find any episode of The Appleseed or Kaboom on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, on the BYU Radio app, or at byuradio.org. Don't forget to subscribe, rate us, and leave a review. That's how the shows grow. I'm Sam Payne, and we can't wait to be with you again on The Appleseed.